From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 798, From Citrix Cloud to Azure Virtual Desktop with guest Aidan Finn, recorded Thursday, September 9th, 2021. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, bringing back a friend, Aidan Finn, who has not been on the show in a while because his life has gotten busy. But the bio is still relevant. Still an MVP in Hyper-V. Not that that's a thing anymore.
No, I'm Azure for the last few years.
Yeah. It's not really a separate thing. But you've been in IT infrastructure for a couple of decades. You know, you and I tend to talk about old school stuff very easily because there is so much going on. And of course, blogging at AidanFinn.com, and I regularly send out, you know, mentions of your blog when I see great posts that I can relate to, and tweets at the very odd handle Joe Elway.
Mm-hmm.
There's a game in there somewhere. Speaking of Hyper-V, though, I got to pull a comment off of a show from a while ago, 5 years ago, but I found it's actually quite prescient now. This is from episode 481, which we did back in July of 2016. We were talking about Hyper-V in Server 2016, you know, a couple of revs ago. And this is a long, and again, admittedly, a five-year-old comment from a fellow by the name of Jawad, who says, so Microsoft's releasing Server 2016 and still treating the server like it's a desktop machine, all the way going back to NT. It's amazing to still be using the GUI to handle servers rather than shifting to a remote text console terminal like Linux and IBM based OSs, which have had since the very beginning, of course, because they both those things in some ways predate the GUI. I mean, Linux has been trying to get a GUI ever since, but you know, he's not wrong. SSH, open access, or secure remote control models for a long, long time. And they have evolved effective resisting security threats and protecting from hacks. That's why Linux servers are so popular on the internet. And I just don't understand why Microsoft is still relying on the GUI for Windows administration through RDP. And that's why I wanted to bring this comment up. And he does, I mean, Joe goes on for a while. And while he's very critical, he's also not wrong. You know, the GUI uses maintaining servers through RDP with a GUI has problems.
It does at scale, yeah. And that's where you want to be using PowerShell and DSC and stuff like that. Or in the cloud, hey, we've got infrastructure as code.
Well, and more you're seeing like the RDP off by default. Right. Windows administrator, like building better tools to make it easy for even someone who prefers to use a GUI to not take that security risk through RDP and getting to remotely administer machines. Like more and more, that's becoming the norm. So it's gone a lot further in this 5 years since this comment was written.
I know. I'm actually still seeing people use the GUI.
I don't disagree with you, friend, that they still are. And again, I sort of get why Windows Server Administrator was made, because it gives you a GUI way to continue to do things without the security risks. If that's what makes you happy, that's great. I'm writing more and more scripts for all of this stuff because I like the repeatability and the reliability, and that I actually get better at things over time. And it's been an ongoing conversation on RunAs. This idea of not just writing scripts for yourself, but for your team and doing source control around them. And that, you know, that there are events in your organization that I think are important. When somebody runs a script for you know, some care and maintenance that they didn't write, somebody else wrote and uses it successfully, like, you all should have a beer that day, because that's a great threshold. When somebody else, you know, modifies that script for everybody else to use again, same sort of thing, because it's maturing the code of administration.
Yeah.
Bit by bit. And I would argue that there's Linux folks out there and so forth that are still in that stage of, yeah, I do everything in the command line, but they're my scripts on my USB key. Nobody else uses them.
Yeah.
You know, that's a different way of thinking.
Yeah. I think the strength that Windows has always had with that GUI, though, is it increases the size of the community and
the approachability,
it makes life easier. And the interesting thing that I've seen in the last couple of years, working primarily as a cloud consultant in a cloud consulting company that has a lot of younger colleagues who are in their 20s, is that they know almost nothing about Windows administration.
Right.
Their job is to deploy the platform.
Right.
You know, they can deploy VMs, no problem. They can, you know, get extensions into VMs in Azure and tell you all sorts of wonderful things about how to integrate them into Key Vault and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But ask them to do a DC promo.
Yeah. Well, that's a very different
set feature. Up a file server.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they glaze over, and it's like, yeah, I can't do that.
I don't do that part yet.
And I've had, you know, I've actually trained one of my colleagues over the last year and a half at a big migration project we worked on. And I trained him how to do basic stuff that, well, you and I would consider basic, like doing a DC promo, doing group policy, you know, setting up users and groups and setting up the
network services,
users and groups and resource permissions,
DNS,
and
stuff DHCP, like that. DHCP, like all of those fundamental services.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that's standing up a new AD infrastructure from scratch. A lot of folks just never done it. It's old school.
Yeah. And you know what? Today's topic is it's absolutely still relevant.
Yeah, totally. Now, and still not going anywhere. And in some ways more complex too, because, you know, hybrid is a reality and looks to be the norm. So it's not just you got an AD infrastructure, it's an AD infrastructure that's interfaced to Azure. So that's another kind of words. Hey, Jawad, I was amused by your comment because it was so prescient. Five years ago, it might have seemed more critical. Today, it's like, yep, you're not wrong. And we definitely now have the tools to work in a very command line way to administer Windows servers. Whether or not we do is another question entirely. And as to your point, Aiden, and whether or not folks have the skills to as well, that the approachability of having these safe GUID interfaces like Windows Server Administrator, to be able to do that discovery, to do that mouse driven finding of what's the capability, what are the settings and so forth, which under the hood, in the end, it's writing PowerShell for you and just remoting it up to the machine, through a secure channel is really interesting. So Jawad, thank you for your comment. And a Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on LinkedIn or Facebook, because every show is published there as well. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a Run As mug. Well, friend, how have you ended up in this virtual desktop land? I mean, I got to presume it's just like a byproduct of the pandemic, because I've been watching VDI forever. We've been talking about VDI, I mean, literally for more than a decade. But it sure seemed to get a spike in the past 18 months, both work by Microsoft and from really smart consultants trying to solve hard problems for organizations that are doing lots of remote work these days.
Yeah. I think for the team that we used to know as Remote Desktop Services and Windows Server, everything fell into place spring of last year for them. Now, we do know through conversations and stuff like that, that use of RDS had actually accelerated because of the cloud.
Right.
So you probably have heard of things like WinFrame in the past. So back in the 1990s, I got trained up on Citrix WinFrame, which then became MetaFrame, which then became something else the week after. And then the week after that, it was renamed to something else. And, you know, these days we know Citrix Cloud. We've heard the term Zen Desktop.
Right. So is this just a new rebranding? Zen Desktop is now called Citrix Cloud?
Yeah, Citrix Cloud is basically, it's kind of a hybrid solution where Citrix provide identity and management through their cloud, which apparently is hosted on Azure.
Interesting.
And allows you to deploy your Citrix session host or VDI either on-prem or in clouds like Azure. And it's a big, complex beastie. But the RDS team, what they were actually seeing was usage was growing, and they were responsible for a lot of the processors in Azure.
Right.
And the reason people were doing it was the same reason we saw back in the 1990s. People were moving their servers. They wanted to centralize them to some location. So today, I'm migrating my legacy workloads to the cloud.
Because RDS is kind of done as of Server 2016, right? Like, they didn't really do a 2019 or a 2022 edition.
They've shifted their attention to Azure.
Okay.
So what we've seen is we're moving these legacy workloads to the cloud. When you move the legacy workload to the cloud, you've got to move the client.
Right.
Because that client expects to be close to the server in terms of latency. It expects to be close to the data.
Yeah.
And that drove a lot of stuff. And they were developing that for Azure. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hits and work from home has become a big deal. And you need a way to give people access to their workloads. And, you know, the best way to do that quickly and rapidly was Azure Virtual Desktop, or Windows Virtual Desktop, as it was previously branded before the summer.
Now, I mean, I did a whole series of pandemic episodes in 2020. And so we talked about folks scaling out their VPNs, sending their workstations home. Although you also got these stories of, hey, here's this old client server app that we're still dependent on. And boy, when you stick the database through a VPN connection, nobody's happy. That's rough.
No, definitely not. So where I was actually working on this wasn't actually anything to do with pandemic at all.
Hmm.
So I was working on a project for the last year and a half. I actually had my last handover meeting today. And it was a local government in Norway, similar to what you would consider a county government or a state government in North America. And we were lifting and shifting everything from a third-party hosting company into Azure.
Right.
So all these legacy workloads, and we were moving them straight up. And when we got to know these workloads, we realized, you know, the typical thing where we would try to take the SQL Server databases and put them into the platform, and that wasn't going to happen. So we look at SQL MI, and even that wasn't going to happen because we had limitations where we were looking at file streams and named pipes and stuff like that. So to give you an idea how legacy this
is. This is really legacy. It's not even TCP/IP necessarily.
Yeah, the vendor bought the software, hasn't really improved it. They've just, you know, patched it up, but they haven't rewritten it in any way, shape, or form, or refactored it. And then there's support issues about moving off of SQL Server and into platform. So you have to basically stick with IaaS. So Windows Server, VM, SQL Server, all that good stuff. And then we had to bring the client experience over. And there were security concerns. So these local governments, they run everything. They run the transport system. They run the policing system. They run the health system.
Interesting. Okay.
So there's health data. And this is the European Union. And it's not Norway. It's not the European Union. Yeah, but they have to be compliant with European Union law. Plus, they have their own stringent privacy laws.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff had to be in the cloud, had to be in the Norway East region. And we had to implement what they call a secure zone concept. Now, we took it way beyond that using micro-segmentation in Azure. So between Azure Firewall, network security groups, and resource firewalls and all that stuff, way, way, way more secure. But we had to make sure the client application was in the cloud as well.
Right.
And we had to make sure it was secure. And
this would be the Ireland data center then, if you're going to be in Azure?
No, this was Norway East.
Okay.
So in Oslo.
So they actually, Microsoft has data centers for Azure in Oslo. So Norway's running in country.
Oh, yeah, Norway's a wealthy country.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a big oil producer.
Mm-hmm.
And the oil is owned by the state. And the profits go to the state. The people of the state, actually. Yeah. So it's, there's some big industries there. So as a relatively small population, they actually have a lot of big industry. Therefore, are big consumers of cloud because you know, they are ahead of the curve when it comes to doing things.
Sure.
Certainly in Europe, they're ahead of the curve and probably at the very tip. So we had a lot of security stuff to do, and we had legacy stuff to do. And we had, well, the solution is move the client application. So move the desktop. And we looked at the alternatives, Windows Virtual Desktop. We looked at it, and, you know, still relatively new. And we're doing everything where we could as infrastructure as code. And we couldn't really at that time with Windows Virtual Desktop because right. It still wasn't compliant with ARM. And the industry trend was, well, you go Citrix because it's the most mature solution in terms of management.
Sure. And been around the longest, got all the features.
Yeah. And I was like, this is what I'm going to recommend. And the customer was happy with that because they had come from Citrix.
Interesting.
In the old hosted solution. So they were happy with sticking with Citrix. Once they got over the sticker shock, they were happy. Because as far as they were concerned, they'd already bought their RDS licensing as part of their M365 licensing.
Right.
So that was already there. Now we've got to pay for that again with their Citrix stuff. Then we have all this complexity that we had to introduce. So we had to drop in all this stuff. And we've gone with this attitude of, you know, platform first.
Right.
And we have all this legacy stuff that we're putting in VMs. And now we're talking about loads of VMs for Citrix.
Right,
of
course.
We've got these NetScaler appliance things, which we get from the marketplace. But all it does is install some Linux VMs, basically. Mm-hmm. You've got to go in. Someone's got to have skills in these NetScalers or ADCs to go in there and configure these things. There's a storefront. What the heck's a storefront? There's a FAS. There's this other thing. Oh, we have to deploy a PKI to make this thing work.
Interesting. And you can see how this these were the evolved features of Citrix as people wanted more security, if they wanted different scaling options and so forth. But you get all this from the cloud now. These are platform pieces on the cloud.
No, they're VMs.
Well, they're VMs in the Citrix context. But if you were looking at other solutions, it's like, why would I want to own that as a virtual machine when I can get it as a service? Like they should be platform pieces.
And that's what I got to thinking.
Uh-oh.
So back in the spring, as we were like in the depths and the throes of migrating these workloads, so we were in the tap dancing on landmines phase of the project, bringing all these legacy things online in rapid fire and handing them over to the client and trying to get the Citrix stuff stable and all that good stuff. And getting to know Packer at the last second so we get these session host builds automated as much as possible out of DevOps. I started thinking, you know, if I could push an awful lot of this complexity into the platform.
Right.
And just take advantage of the natural identity handling of Azure AD instead of this complex thing that seems to have so many parts that could fail between Citrix Cloud and Azure AD to get multi-factor authentication working through Azure AD. Because I think one of my colleagues counted the steps and how it works, and there's something like 15 different interactions between all these different things to make it work. So it's 15 points where the whole thing could fail.
Well, and all things you need to diagnose, maintain, monitor. This is actually a great story for me, Aiden, just because it's a recognition of the difference between IaaS and PaaS and SaaS, right? Like you were doing an IaaS implementation of this, which on the grounds makes like a lot of sense, but you start to look at the surface area own, like, boy, you're really getting the minimum value that cloud provides. You don't own the hardware. You rent it by the minute. But that's about it. Everything else you're on the hook for.
Yeah.
And I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the SQL Server and Azure SQL Conference at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, December 5th to 10th. You've heard the SQL Q&A shows we publish on RunAs twice a year from the conference. That is a microcosm of the 6 days of fantastic learning available to you from the real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team that speak at the show. Learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as insight into the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, working in the cloud, and exploring all the new features of the latest version of SQL Server. And if you still have questions by the end of the week, join the conference's closing session and be part of the SQL Q&A show on Run As Radio. The SQL Server and Azure SQL Conference is at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, December 5th to 10th. Use code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at msqlconf.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back. It's RUNAS Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Hayden Finn. And we're talking about this great story of, you know, trying to virtualize these apps into the cloud and coming at it from a very much virtual machine, infrastructure as a service approach, and starting to just look at the monitoring surface area, all these different tools, much less the diagnostics. Getting it worked the first time is one thing, but keeping it maintained and being able to deal with it when you have problems is another entirely.
Yeah, monitoring was another challenge we had.
Mm-hmm.
So in our standardized deployment, we take advantage of Azure Monitor and Azure Monitor Logs or Log Analytics a lot.
Right.
And so we visualize workloads using workbooks. We take advantage of that data. We send everything into that Log Analytics workspace, and then that doubles up. So we have all this intelligence for Azure Sentinel as well.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Citrix just does its own thing.
Well, sure. They predate all this, right? Like,
yeah.
They've got a legacy to deal with too, right?
They're cloud agnostic.
Sure.
And they deal with on-prem as well. So we're just like, we've got this whole set of data that's just not there either. So we've got to go to Citrix Cloud to deal with that stuff.
Right.
So we had a whole lot of rubbish that we had to basically deal with. Now, the one thing I will say for Citrix is once you've got that stuff up and running,
mm-hmm.
that's when you start to hit the sweet spot with Citrix.
Right.
So the operational side of things with Citrix is very mature.
Nice.
Because they've been building that for ages.
So I bet if you're using their stuff in their cloud, their consoles are probably great. Like they have a good... No? I was thinking this is a mature product. So they've got a good view.
There has been an error. The error is error. Contact support.
Yes. Object now found. Yes.
Yeah. When there's an error, you try it again, and it might work.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
And if it doesn't, you contact support to find out what the error was.
And if you're support, then you panic.
Yeah. So that could be quite frustrating. Mm-hmm. But just the basic stuff. So, you know, dealing with your patch cycling and your software deployments and stuff seems to be that the recommended approach from most people, when I say most, we'll say 60-70% of people, is that you don't patch your existing machines, you rebuild them from scratch.
Sure. Just big new VMs.
Yeah, you get a clean machine. So when you have multiple people signing into the same machine constantly, so you could have 10, 20, 30, 40 people signing into the same VM, accessing their desktops or their published applications or whatever it is. You know what it is like with your own PC. After a little while,
it gets a little crusty.
You just want to reinstall it.
Yeah, yeah.
The registry's gotten a mess.
Yeah, it's like software is fatty food and the machine's ready for an angioplasty.
Yeah.
Like
maybe it just needs a reboot. Maybe it needs a rebuild.
Yeah.
And in the Citrix world, you schedule that reboot. And a reboot in the Citrix world redeploys your VM from scratch.
Hmm. Wow.
They've got this cool system for handling the identity of the machine, so it doesn't have to rejoin the domain or anything like that. It basically brings the machine back with a new OS disk. So
okay.
It's a fresh install. And then you can have your build process. We happen to use Packer out of DevOps to rebuild our image. And then we could supply that to Citrix. And again, part of our scheduled rebuild, or even our shutdown, it would shut down the machine, take the new image, deploy it out, and get the latest patches, latest software. That stuff, really, really sweet. But the cost of getting there and then the complexity of all this stuff. And then we have this issue, which is, skills.
Right.
How many people out there know Citrix?
Yeah.
Even just know it. Not know it well, but know it.
But and then again, it's also been around for a while. But
yeah.
I got it. You know, my experience has been the folks that are good at it, they're busy.
Yeah. And they're really good. Like I speak a conference called E2EPC, which it's mostly in Europe, but they go worldwide as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the attendees, not just the speakers, but the attendees at this event are geniuses. And they know the Citrix world. They can hack profiles in Windows like nice. Crazy. They can handle printing like crazy. But those are a few people.
Yeah, not enough.
Yeah, and they're like you and me. And we were talking about Windows a little bit earlier, where the skills,
Yeah.
Getting older and older. And the younger people are not coming up.
Yeah.
Because we do have too busy doing Cosmos DB stuff and all that fun stuff.
Well, and it's the thing is, I wonder if we're in this transitory time, because it sure strikes me that Azure Virtual Desktop has approached this very differently. That it's just architecturally different.
Yeah. And they started off in one direction and they realized they were getting it wrong and they started all over.
Right. And honestly, Aiden, I think they've done that more than once with VDI over the past 10 years. I go back and look at the catalog of RunAS episodes where we talked about virtualization. Each time it's a different product.
We could actually even say it's a third or fourth iteration in Azure.
Yeah.
Let alone That's even amazing. The Windows Server history. So they came at it fresh and they came at it with build all the stuff in the platform. And it's sitting on top of Azure AD. That's the big strength of Azure. It's like the big strength of Windows was you had a domain.
Mm-hmm.
In Azure, you have Azure AD, which is not just your identity system, but it's the start of your security system as well.
Interesting.
Protecting that first point of attack, which is your identity. And when you're building Azure Virtual Desktop, it's just ridiculously easy. You build this workspace, which is literally just glue for connecting your identity to your published desktops or your applications.
Right.
You stand up your host pool, which is your collection of machines. So whether it's dedicated machines for VDI or it's a pool of machines for VDI or it's a pool of session hosts and that multiple people sign into. And then you publish your application groups, which is your desktop or your published applications. And there's nowhere in there where you're saying, right, do I need gateway servers? Do I need storefront servers? Do I need identity integration? There's none of that.
That's intrinsic. It's just, maybe those things exist, but that's Microsoft's problem. You don't care.
No, they definitely exist, but they're in the platform.
Right.
You don't see them. You don't pay for them.
Yeah.
You buy your RDS license and you pay for the host pool VMs. And your RDS license, if you've bought the right SKUs of M365 or Office 365 or Windows 10 VDA, you already have that RDS license.
Right. Which I think, again, thinking back to the pandemic context, and I've talked about virtual desktop a couple of times last year, over and over again, it's like, hey, you already own these Windows licenses. You already own VDI licenses.
Yeah.
This is not about licensing. This is about configuration, getting set up with the stuff and going forward with it.
Yeah. So getting that up and running was cool. And I approached it in July as kind of a project for work where I wanted to build a productized solution.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy as a consultant to go into a customer and go up and click, click, click. And here's a desktop in the cloud. Wow, aren't I amazing? But, that has no value. that's great for a proof of concept. Look how fantastic this thing is. But realistically, you need an infrastructure. So you need your domain with your group policy and all that stuff. You need to be able to configure your FS logics and your folder redirection and all that malarkey.
Right.
And you need to make sure your storage is backed up and it's fast enough for your login storms on Monday morning. You need a way of building your images.
Right.
So, for me, the solution was Packer in the platform. And so taking advantage of Azure Packer. Image Builder is in the platform.
Right.
In Azure Image Builder. And I can publish those images to shared image gallery. So if I want to make my Windows Virtual Desktop solution multi-region and really sexy, I can basically that shared image gallery replicate my image runs the 50-odd Azure regions around the world.
Wow.
And if I'm big enough, I can even have multiple copies out there so I can provision out my images even faster. So that was the big thing for me. And then coming up with an architecture where, everything was laid out logically and could deal with different concepts like application silos and stuff like that, mm-hmm. To deal with, optimizing for security zones and things like that. If I'm back in that scenario again, which I probably will be in the near future. And then the other stuff that, have to look at now is the feature gap between where Azure Virtual Desktop is and where Citrix Cloud is. So the big Citrix feature Cloud, gap is the operationalization.
You're right. And this is where Citrix still has its strength.
Yeah. So great. I have my image. and I have my host pool. How do I update my host pool with my image?
Right. In a rolling way that doesn't interrupt current working people. So the new guys come in on the new image and the old guys can finish with their old image and then the new image later.
Yeah. So I've got to be able to, the terminology is you drain your hosts.
Right.
So they stop accepting new connections. And as people sign out, they basically are redirected to other machines.
Right.
When they try to sign in again. And when the machine is empty or empty enough, there's a scheduled, you know, period where people know the machine could go offline for like 10, 20 minutes or whatever right. it is.
Like, go get a coffee.
And if and it may not even be that, that when they get logged out, they just sign in again and then they're brought to another machine.
Right.
So it's dealing with that stuff and the automated reboots again, where you've got to deal with the fact that the people are signed in and you want to minimize the interruptions to their workflows.
Sure.
So that's the stuff that Citrix really have running quite sweetly.
Already nailed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I can see you've got a hand roll, sort of a tool pool. You've got new instances. You set up a new pool with the new instances. You know, you redirect new traffic to that. And now you're monitoring the drains and clearing up and eventually shut the old pool down completely. Like, it's all doable. They just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm looking at going, right, when are they going to have it? I want to have something. I'm probably looking at doing the PowerShell for that.
Right. You'll write the scripts for it.
The algorithm for that has got to be nasty because you're going to have all sorts of error checking in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
So I was curious about what people were doing with this because, you know, when you watch Microsoft talk about this, it's all about using MEM or whatever it's called this week in June, Config Manager, whatever. It's using those endpoint management solutions to continuously maintain the same machines for years and years and years. And I'm thinking to myself, realistically, are people doing that? So I actually put up a poll on Twitter a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked, what were people doing? And 60% of people came back and said, and it was an even 60% came back and said, we're rebuilding the pool when we've got new application versions or we want to push out Windows patches.
Right.
And 40% of people came back and said, we're continuing to update the same machines continuously. And I'm looking at that thinking, don't those machines just slow down?
Yeah. Don't they get just uglier?
Yeah.
Plus, if you lose them, like if there's an outage, when you do have to stand up new again, are they going to be different? Like, I just worry about what's in that machine that isn't in the scripts now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a colleague from one of our other countries asking me, well, when you're looking at your software installation, you're doing traditional software installations. Why aren't you using MSIX and having that app streaming effect where the machines are effectively stateless? And I was like, you know what? In theory, that sounds awesome. And I'm sure if everything was MSIs from Microsoft, and let's face it, most software from Microsoft isn't in an MSI format.
Yeah.
It's still a .exe.
Yeah.
But if everything was, you know, from Microsoft, and that's all I had to deal with, MSIX would probably be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm dealing primarily with legacy vendors who won't support anything out of the norm, if I'm effectively repackaging their software to be delivered as MSIX, they're not going to support it.
Right.
And support is pretty important for these legacy applications.
Yeah, I mean, if it's an internal application, getting it repackaged as MSIX is a possibility.
Yeah.
If you still got the team, like that's not a trivial thing either. Like often I find these apps that really needed virtualization, there's nobody left working on them. Like you have your installer and that's what it is. And whether or not you can put another installer around is another question entirely.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, if I'm deploying this stuff and if I'm maintaining it and putting patches on it, it does look like the best approach is to use Azure Image Builder, which is basically Packer in the platform.
Right.
And produce that image on a regular basis. And then it's a matter of shipping that thing out to the machines. So the approach we're probably looking at now is actually temporarily doubling the size of the host pool.
Right.
And then decommissioning the older machines as they drain of users. Yeah. So that seems like it's probably the simplest and safest solution that we're going to go with.
Yeah, and doubling makes me cringe because there's the finance guy going, you did what?
Yeah.
But it's not that bad. It's very temporary. And one would argue, you know, you could scale it piece by piece and say, well, we're going to increase the number of pools. We're going to put some instances, and as those fill up, add a few more into it. Because at the same time that one's filling up, the other one's emptying. So,
and think about when you're going to do this work. You're going to do it during the quietest part of the day.
Yeah.
So that means your auto scaling has already kicked in.
It's already wound.
So there's only a small number of machines powered up.
Yeah.
So when you double the size of the pool, your auto scaling is going to kick in. You know, every 5-15 minutes or whatever, and it's actually going to reduce the number of machines. Yeah. So you're only, yes, the disks will be there, but you're only paying for the compute cycle based on the allocated state of the VM on a per minute basis.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's nowhere near as scary as you think, and there's no other way. Like, it's that or you dead drop, kill everybody, and bring new ones up, and who, that's bad too.
Yeah, that's bad for employment status.
Yeah. That's a productivity hit. You know, I spent less on the cloud, but the company made less because I shut everything down. Well done.
Yeah. You know? You'll have more time for golf.
Yeah. Plus, you're talking about a rollover period. It's not that long, especially with auto scaling. You're probably, because you're doing it at a quiet time, the pool is not as big as the single pool at high time, even when there's two pools. So it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting to look at. You're doing the image builder approach because you just get away from the install problems. You build out a gold image. That's putting work on you as the IT guy to maintain. They're going to want new versions. They're going to want new features, and you're going to have to keep those images up to date. Or you get into these other rolling install options, store-based models and so forth.
And you can get clever about that because if you use the Packer approach, it's basically just running a PowerShell script that runs an installer from some location.
Right.
So that location, you can basically say, whether it's your internal developers or whoever it is that's acquiring the software, here's the location that I want you to put your software. And you have something in there like a script that I will call. And you have a single variable in the top of that script, which indicates the version of your software that you want me to install. And there's a folder named after that version number.
And off we go.
Yeah, so when you update your software, next time my Packer build runs or my Azure Image Builder process runs, it's just going to take the latest version of the software that you've supplied me.
And are you tending to build this common desktops across the board, or are there definitely role-based desktops?
They can be silo-based.
Yeah.
So we've seen where software might be incompatible with each other. The project that came off of, we had the nasty situation where there were mixed versions of Office licensing.
Oh.
Yeah. So, we had, temporarily for a while, a nasty situation where there was per device licensing and per user licensing. We had a legacy software that only supported Office 2010.
Oh, so they had to maintain these, you know, this is not laziness that led them to the situation of a mixed Office deployment. This is a dependency on a piece of software that has a dumb dependency.
Yeah. It wasn't my customer's laziness. No. It was laziness on another part, not supporting a version of Office that was released in 2010.
Oh, no. And, you know, I talked to folks who are maintaining AutoCAD licenses and have the same kind of problems. Our customers are using this old version of AutoCAD. They can't read new files. AutoCAD will automatically upgrade any old file to the new one the moment you touch with a newer version. So, yeah, we have to keep running this old version for that customer.
You know? Yeah, you start finding yourself, you start off with a diagram and it's like, right, we have one host. And then you start getting into the discovery process as you get to know these client applications. And you've done your best with the assessments and no matter what you do, there's always more stuff. That's why I call it tap dancing on landmines.
Yeah.
You're constantly finding stuff and you're losing colleagues left, right, and center.
I got to say,
their limbs get blown off.
The virtual desktop solutions to this may actually be better than any of the bare metal solutions, too. That if we've got this goofball piece of software that has these weird dependencies on other old versions, that I can make an image for that and stand up a VDI for that so that you can do that work and not have to mix with everything else. Like, that's not a bad thing either.
And you improve your security because that thing is no longer on the employee's desk, whether that desk is in the office, right, on the company Wi-Fi, or in their home, where, you know, God knows what's going on around the place. That thing is now in a secure data center,
right?
If we use the term data center, and it's sitting behind a firewall. And if you have done your firewall correctly, you have blocked everything by default, including outbound traffic.
Yes.
And you've micro-segmented the network, so nothing can communicate with each other. So one machine becomes compromised, your blast area is restricted.
Pretty small.
And if ransomware manages to get on the machine, it can't talk to its command and control system.
Right.
Because the traffic is blocked.
You've locked all that down. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're using Azure Firewall, you've got your IDPS and the premium SKU, you've got your threat intelligence on the standard SKU that's, you know, blocking, even if you're allowing certain outbound connectivity, it's looking for the malicious IPs that are on the threat intelligence database.
Right.
And it's blocking those connections, even if the rules allow them. So you can really secure that environment for those legacy applications by moving this stuff into the cloud and putting in some of the correct mechanisms that we expect to see these days.
Right. Well, it is interesting. Like, this started off as a conversation I felt like of a workaround to the weird pandemic conditions, and because you can't VPN everything. And suddenly I'm thinking more and more about, this is how we decrease the attack surface of legacy software and legacy implementations. Like, I'm thinking about that user that's being forced to live with Office 2010 because of a dependency on an app. And in this virtual model, they could also have an O365 account and really not have a problem with that and still be able to access this. So, you know, it's not like you're stuck in the wilderness with them either. Like, I'm really excited about that, Aiden. That solves more problems than it creates.
Yeah. There's all sorts of weird and wonderful things you can think of. You know, from the app developer point of view, which I'm sure you would associate yourself with, I've had many conversations with ISVs in the past who had software they would sell to customers on-prem, and they wanted to bring that to the cloud. And obviously, the ideal state is rebuild it as a SaaS application.
Sure.
But take a legacy thing and rebuild it as SaaS is not something that's going to happen overnight.
No.
But they still want the advantages of cloud. And of course, the big thing you can do here is you could build your software as it is in the cloud, and then sell that to your client as a published application through Azure Virtual Desktop. And Microsoft made that available as a licensing option recently at the partner conference.
Interesting.
And one of my colleagues is actually doing that for an ISV in Norway at the moment. I think they're in the insurance business. And they're making their software available now through Azure Virtual Desktop to their clients.
Right. And so you get all, it's kind of SaaS-y, not really.
Yeah.
But at least the customer's now being billed by an interval, maybe by a user count, an instant count or usage or something like that. They're not deploying it themselves. They're not doing, perhaps not doing annual license fee. And now you can begin that migration to a new architecture.
Yep. And the vendor, you know, has a known version of software that everyone's on. They're able to build it in a standardized way, using one of the many methods that Azure offers.
Yeah.
And from the client point of view, they're onboarded really quickly. They don't have to go out and purchase hardware to make this software work anymore.
Yeah.
And there's obviously the vendor has the stickiness of a thing going on.
Sure. And it's a phone call to add more seats or less, a web page, nothing. You know, just bill them for additional seats like that. You get all that capability.
And it gives the vendor breathing room now to think about how to refactor this as a SaaS application.
Yeah, for sure. That's really fascinating. So I don't know, it feels maybe the cloud is what virtual desktops were waiting for all this time, you know?
Yeah, it does feel like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Because now we finally see some real benefits in the sense of not just virtualization for virtualization's sake and the virtualization effects, but getting rid of the ownership of the hardware, getting rid of the ownership of the operating system, like stripping a lot of that stuff away that gives us higher values. Aiden, so much fun to talk to you. I really appreciate your approach to thinking about virtual desktop in the Azure world. Thanks so much for coming back.
Glad to be here.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.